I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, January the 29th. And we wonder this hour, are you doing anything to protest the escalation of troops in Iraq? Or doing anything to encourage the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq? Why or why not? There was a big rally in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. Tens of thousands of people were there, but a more precise crowd estimate differs depending on who you ask. One of the organizers in an email said there were at least 150,000 people there, and he bemoaned how the media got the size of the crowd wrong again. And Capitol Police, while they no longer give official estimates because of disputes like this, privately told reporters they didn't think the crowd reached 100,000 as hoped by organizers. Other rallies protesting the war in Iraq and calling on Congress to defund the war were held in other cities across the country on Saturday, like Boston, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. A march in Madison drew 500 people, according to the organizers. How does today's anti-war movement compare to past anti-war movements, Vietnam in particular? What are the differences, and will the peace activists today hasten the end of the war in Iraq by rallying regularly like this? Will the movement grow if President Bush doesn't change his mind over surging troops in Iraq, or if Congress doesn't do anything to defund the war? We'll welcome your questions and reactions and your thoughts on the effectiveness of the protests over the weekend at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. If you're in Madison, use 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest this hour is Jeremy Suri, Associate Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's the author of Power and Protest, Global Revolution and the Rise of Détente, and the forthcoming Henry Kissinger and the American Century. He joins us this hour from Florence, Italy. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
So did the anti-war protests in the U.S. over the weekend get any play in the Italian media?
You know, it did get a little bit, and it got a fair amount of play in the context of what Europeans see as declining Bush support at home, and what many of them see or hope is an end to American activities in Iraq.
Yeah. The any comment on the dispute over the size of the crowd in Washington, D.C.?
You know, it's interesting. Most of the European newspapers try to avoid that issue. Though the estimates I saw, and I tried to follow this pretty carefully, the estimates were under 100,000 that they were using, but they tried to avoid taking a position on it as well.
I guess my thought is 100,000 isn't really anything to sneeze at anyway, is it?
No, not at all. I actually think that we shouldn't get too caught up in worrying whether it was 100,000 or more or less. I think what's significant is the question of who's there. And all the accounts I've seen, Joy, have shown that it was a real cross-section of people. And some of these people were quoted in a number of major newspapers like the New York Times, the Herald Tribune, and elsewhere, veterans of prior wars, actual military service people today, mothers, ordinary workers of one kind or another, professionals, and then people who had protested other issues in the past, a real cross-section. This was not just people on the traditional political left in any way.
Yeah. How do you compare this to Vietnam War protests?
Well, I think in a way, there are a lot of similarities, but we have to be careful. And the similarities that jump to mind are, one, this cross-section of people who in some way or shape or form are becoming politically charged around this issue in a way they weren't before. This happened in the late 1960s with the Vietnam War, and crowds that might have been larger than this in the late 60s would have also included a cross-section of people like that, which I just described. So that's certainly one similarity. The second is the consciousness, I think, that now is evident that what Bush is doing is not working. No one, even the president, is claiming that it's working. Maybe the vice president is still claiming that, but it struck me that the president in the State of the Union address was in a similar position to Lyndon Johnson in 1968, when it was clear that everything he had done, for whatever reason, had not produced the outcome that he had promised. That consciousness, I think, is very similar as well, and that's connected to words like quagmire and things like that that we've inherited from Vietnam. And the third similarity, I think, is the reaction among politicians. There is a tendency when that consciousness develops to circle the wagons, and I think we're seeing that now, to seek some solution that will not be a simple run out and admit mistake, but actually to try to find some way to win. And that's the paradoxical thing, Joy. I think that when you see rising public protest against policy, the inclination among policymakers is to go in more strongly than to pull out.
Yeah. These protests were also aimed at Congress more so than perhaps the president.
Right. I think that's true. And I think there's also somewhat of a parallel there. The protesters in the late 60s were also arguing for more congressional restrictions. And, of course, they got some of that. It didn't always work. But as is the case today, many prominent members of the president's own party in the late 60s pulled away from Lyndon Johnson on the Democratic side and from Richard Nixon on the Republican side. And we're certainly seeing that today with Chuck Hagel, Arlen Specter. I'm guessing soon John McCain pulling away from the president's policies.
We're talking about the anti-Iraq war protests that were held in Washington, D.C. and in other U.S. cities over the weekend, including Madison, and wondering how effective these protests might be in hastening an end to U.S. involvement in Iraq. Our guest is Jeremy Suri, an associate professor of history at UW-Madison. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about the demonstrations today compared to yesterday. And we also wonder, are you doing anything to protest this war? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 17 minutes past 6 o'clock right now. It's at issue with Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. Ben's guest after 5 o'clock will talk about climate change. It's the topic of discussion as the Great Decisions series continues today after 5. We're talking about the anti-Iraq war demonstrations that were held in Washington, D.C. and other U.S. cities, including Madison, over the weekend. And welcome your thoughts and questions about the anti-war movement today compared to yesterday. Our guest is Jeremy Suri, Associate Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, author of Power and Protest, Global Revolution and the Rise of Détente, and the forthcoming Henry Kissinger and the American Century. During the demonstration in Washington, D.C. over the weekend, Jane Fonda said, "Silence is no longer an option." She says that's why she came to Washington on Saturday to add her voice to tens of thousands of others protesting the war in Iraq. The actress, who came to symbolize the Vietnam War protests, says it was her first anti-war demonstration in 34 years. There were large rallies also in places like Boston, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. In Washington, several hundred demonstrators tried to rush the Capitol building, and a few scuffled with police officers who stopped them. One student says the crowd wanted to send a message that they would not be passive. He said Congress usually has to be forced to take action. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Professor Suri, any significance to Jane Fonda being at this Washington rally?
Yes, there's a lot of significance to it because in the eyes of many people, she's seen as someone who did unsavory, traitorous things during the Vietnam War by visiting North Vietnam. So having Hanoi Jane there in the eyes of many people is a hot-button issue. So I think there is a lot of significance to that.
But as you noted, it wasn't just Jane Fonda's at this particular demonstration. It was a real cross-section of people, you believe.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so I think her being there is maybe a headline issue, but is really not the significant issue in terms of politics and foreign policy.
Let's take some calls. Our lines are full for the moment. Chris in Madison is with us first. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I'm a little hesitant because I'm not the historian on the line here, but it does seem to me that the left, well, the old line is that the military is always fighting the war before, and the left, I think, is now fighting the war before the war before the war before.
Mm-hmm.
It's always fighting Vietnam, and
yeah.
It's not quite as heresy, so much heresy as it was, but protest did not end the war in Vietnam. I was there. I mean, anybody who's 50 or older, you know, remembers that. And So I think that what we have is people who have to continue using something that was ineffective in the first place. Plus, the when you throw in, say, the Jane Fonda factor, what you've got is you've got a left that was a new left in the 60s and now is very, very old, and it's had a real hardening of the attitudes.
Yeah. I think that's, those are excellent points, Chris, and I would agree with everything you said. I think there is a way in which we keep replaying the same story from the late 1960s. In a way, it's become the gold standard upon which people turn to, and there is a problem with that on both sides, among the protesters, but also among the politicians who are falling into some of the same pathologies, I think, as well. Where I do think the comparison is helpful is in understanding how policy gets influenced by society at large. I don't think the protesters in the late 60s ended the Vietnam War. They certainly didn't. But they did contribute to a recognition among Nixon and Kissinger and others that they had to bring the war to an end. And one thing that Nixon and Kissinger did is they pursued, in addition to escalating the conflict, and in some ways doing some effective things militarily in spite of the cost, they did also pursue serious negotiations. They pursued a diplomatic settlement, for better or for worse, which they might not have pursued without public pressure. And I think that's something that a way in which public pressure can be relevant today as well. I'm struck with how hesitant the Bush administration has been to pursuing a diplomatic strategy, even one suggested by James Baker and others. And insofar as Congress can push the president to do that, I think that's a way in which the Vietnam analogy might be somewhat helpful, though certainly doesn't answer all the questions.
Yeah. While the protests may not have ended the war in Vietnam, bringing it back to today, dismay over this war and public opinion over this war and throwing out Congress over this war, that's got to have some sort of influence.
Well, I think it definitely does. I think presidents are politicians, and they're always concerned about public support, and that's why it's especially important that the people at the protests are not just those who are refighting the battles of the late 60s, and some of them are, but also the kinds of people who you wouldn't expect to see there, veterans in many cases. There were a number of people who are in uniform now who are serving who were there. That matters a lot. That doesn't end the war. That doesn't necessarily change policy immediately, but it puts the president in a more defensive position, and it should inspire some new creative thought, I would hope, about different kinds of initiatives, maybe diplomatic initiatives that we could pursue. That's certainly what happened in the 1970s. Nixon and Kissinger pursued a new diplomacy in part because of public pressure.
Thanks to Chris. John in Madison is with us now. Hi, John.
Yeah, well, I also lived during that Vietnam War, and I can tell you right now the protests were effective, whether they were the deciding issue or not. Both Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon wrote extensively about how these guys got on their tails about this and how they affected them. And there were hundreds of COINTELPRO actions by the FBI to disrupt them. So that just shows that they were effective. As far as this present war goes, I think there is a continuing link with Vietnam. In other words, I see them both as imperialistic wars for different reasons. They give different reasons, but there's the same thrust in both of them. As far as this particular war, there were massive protests before this war started. These current protests were to give support for the Democrats, who were primarily elected and took over the majority in the Congress, on the back of massive public support against this current war. How does this war protest differ from past war protests? One, they're now using lobbyists to go after the politicians. Two, they're using the Internet to mobilize popular financial support. And three, a lot of groups are now trying to position leftist think tanks on the media as opposed to this conservative right-wing spectrum that we usually see, for example, in the McNeil-era news
network. Professor Suri, does John have that right?
Well, John's got a lot of excellent points there, and again, I agree with a lot of what he said. The protests did have a direct personal influence on Johnson and Nixon. John is absolutely right about that. We see this in their memoirs, in their phone conversations that we have recordings of. It definitely affected them psychologically as well as in terms of policy, and I do think there is a link between the Vietnam and Iraq wars. I would not necessarily use the same terminology John used, just to my liking, would be more to talk about these as cases where the United States gets overextended and gets involved in areas of the world that it doesn't understand well, commits itself in a way that doesn't match the real issues on the ground, and finds itself very quickly involved in a war that it's not prepared to fight or not necessarily interested in even fighting. And I think that is an important parallel. It's an important problem that we have in the way we train our foreign policy makers and the way we think about foreign policy. In terms of the differences from in the actions of protesters today, John makes some good points about the use of lobbyists, the internet, and movement of leftist think tanks, and those are changes. But to me, the most significant change is actually in the image of the protests. I think what the activists against the war today have avoided doing very effectively is they have avoided alienating large parts of the population. I was struck, and maybe we'll have time to talk about this later, at how small the counter-protest was, according to all reports. That's significant. One of the problems in the late 1960s, for better or for worse, was that protesters alienated a large part of middle America, what Nixon called the silent majority. I don't see that happening now, and I think that's a sign of the effectiveness of these protests.
Yeah, maybe that's because there is no silent majority. The majority are against, aren't they?
That
yeah.
might be part of
Yeah, it
part
does
of
say
answer.
It says about 40 people staged a counter protest in Washington D.C. One army officer who lost a leg in Iraq says the anti-war demonstrators need to remember the sacrifices that US troops are making.
Right. And I think all the accounts I've read and all of my interaction as an observer to these groups has been that they've been careful not to appear to be disparaging the actions of veterans and those who serve. And for better or for worse, that was a problem in the late 1960s. I think it's a way in which the activists today have learned to avoid some of those false images from the past.
Thanks to John. Dennis in Madison is with us now. Hi, Dennis. Dennis, are you there? Dennis is not at his phone, and because of that, I'll have to move on to John in Krivitz. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Joy. I see a difference, as a Vietnam veteran, I see a difference between Vietnam and protesting and the protesting that exists right now in the attitude of the troops themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The troops during the Vietnam War, when we were over there, we were pretty down and out about what was going on in the States. And our will was broken down. It sure was with a majority of the guys. And I talk to the troops right now. I'm retired military, and I talk to some of the troops right now. One of my neighbors is over there right now. I get email from them. And they have a different attitude, a completely different attitude. We have a volunteer force right now, and that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And as to the impact that the protesters are having, I don't think they're going to have much of a big impact right now. It's like Jim Webb, a Democrat from Virginia, was saying, you know, we're over there. I mean, we shouldn't be there, but we are there. The insurgents are there, and that's primarily why we're there and should be there until we can get this thing over with. And it's not going to be a short haul. It's going to be a long haul.
Yeah.
We only have a minute before our news break, Professor Suri.
I think that those are important points, and I also think that the military today, as John says, is very different from the military of the late 1960s. It is an all-volunteer force. It's much better managed. It has much better leadership, much more esprit de corps, I think, and it's held up very well. But I will say that in my discussions with people in the military, some of my students, people I know, I also sense not a demoralization, but a great deal of anxiety. They're not sure what their mission is there, and they're also terribly overextended. These are people doing much longer terms of duty than they expected to do in many cases, and that's a real problem.
Our guest is Jeremy Suri, Associate Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the author of Power and Protest, Global Revolution and the Rise of Détente, and the forthcoming Henry Kissinger and the American Century. He's talking with us from Florence, Italy this morning, this afternoon for him, about the protests that were held over the weekend in Washington, D.C. and other major U.S. cities and Madison, Wisconsin, protesting the war in Iraq. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 6:36 on this Monday, January the 29th. Energized by congressional opposition to President Bush's Iraq policy, tens of thousands of anti-war demonstrators gathered on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. on Saturday to demand a withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. House Judiciary Committee Chair John Conyers threatened to use congressional spending power to stop the war. The Michigan Democrat told the rally it is the obligation of Congress to stop the president. A half a dozen other lawmakers joined a list of celebrities, including Jane Fonda, on the speaker's podium. We're talking about this demonstration in Washington, D.C. Similar demonstrations were held in other major cities across the country. And as we just heard in state news, there were about 500 people protesting in Madison, and there was another demonstration in Racine. We're talking about the anti-war movement today as compared to yesterday and wondering how effective this might be in hastening the end of U.S. involvement in Iraq. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Our guest is Jeremy Suri, Associate Professor of History at UW-Madison. He is the author of a number of books, including the forthcoming Henry Kissinger and the American Century. And our next caller for him is Kenneth in Madison, not Dennis, as I thought in the last half hour. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Well, I was there at Washington, D.C., up near the stage, and I felt that the main message that the people were trying to give was to give more courage to Congress to get out on a fixed schedule. And the biggest number of signs I saw were ones that said, get out now, and but I don't think people meant now like tomorrow. They meant now soon, and the biggest number I heard was get out in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And my own feeling is that we ought to get out of Baghdad. I don't think, I've heard that we don't have people in our troops that speak Arabic, and I think you need people in an urban area that are the Iraqis themselves taking care of their own capital, and we should draw back and provide general support to Iraq and work our way into a position where we can give Iraq back to the Iraqis. And then my other concern is that we deal with the refugees that have been created in neighboring countries. You've had a recent news article that I've heard this morning about Palestinians caught on the border, and relief agencies aren't able to deal with the refugees very well, and the neighboring countries don't have the resources to deal with the refugees that have been created.
So. Kenneth, I'm glad you called back, and I want to give certainly our guest an opportunity to respond to your comments, but why did you feel motivated to travel to Washington, D.C. to participate in this demonstration?
Well, basically, I felt the demonstration was aimed at Congress. I felt that everybody there had totally given up on the President of the United States, seeing a reasonable way out, that he had not listened to the Iraq study group at all, and the only focus that could bring about any real change in policy would be to focus in Congress, and I was most interested in the congressional people that got up on the stage and talked about their, I think there's a House Resolution number 508, and I think it's being sponsored by Maxine Walters and Lynn Woolsey to get out of Israel and get out of, you know, that was another issue, get out of Iraq in a period of 6 months. And
But you feel that obviously that your presence there wasn't useless, that would give Congress the courage that you want Congress to have.
Yeah, that was the main thing, and I think that many people were planning to stay over today and actually visit representatives and senators' offices to talk to them about how they would like a more rational policy.
Thank you very much, Kenneth. I really appreciate your participation. Professor Suri, you want to react?
Well, I think this is very insightful to have the comments from Kenneth there, and everything he says makes a lot of sense to me. I will say that the attempt to lobby Congress is sensible, but also in a way doomed to failure. And this is where the Vietnam experience is relevant. There's very little Congress can actually do. Now, part of it is that Congress chooses not to do things. Congressmen and women try to avoid taking tough stands, and they've done that throughout the Iraq War, as they did throughout the Vietnam War. But beyond that, their only real leverage over the commander-in-chief is the power of the purse. And it's very difficult for members of Congress to cut off funding to American troops overseas. That's really the only way they can force the president to pull the troops back. They can pass all kinds of resolutions, but that's rhetoric. If they're going to put their money where their mouths are, they're going to have to cut off funding. And that's a very, very hard thing for a member of Congress to do. The way our system is set up, the commander-in-chief decides when and where to send the forces. Congress can only react after the fact. So I understand the desire to appeal to Congress, and I don't want to say that's ineffective, but it's not sufficient to me.
Yeah. Well, John Conyers was at this rally saying, yeah, we got to cut off the purse strings. We hear Senator Russ Feingold saying that that's what he's willing to do, but they're not in the majority.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be very hard to get that. I think what we're likely to get will be a strongly worded resolution of one kind or another that will call for, similar to what Kenneth was saying, a phased withdrawal, mm-hmm. turning things over to the Iraqis. But if we're dealing here with the troop surge that the president has suggested of more than 20,000 soldiers, what Congress can do is to say we will not fund those soldiers. But it's going to be hard for them to do that because Bush will send them there and then he'll blame Congress for not funding them.
Yeah. Kenneth, thanks again for the call. Joe in Holycroft, Iowa. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I would just like to make a comment that the general public, I admire those who go there to try to get a point across, but what they really need to do is in the ballot box to quit voting for the lesser of two evils. We have two political parties who are basically one party with two legs. We've been lied at so often. I mean, people just got to wake up and give a third party or a fourth party a chance. That's our only salvation.
Is that our only salvation, Professor Suri?
Well, I certainly think that having a broader spectrum of opinion in our national politics would allow for a broader debate and more alternatives. So I agree with Joe in that sense. And that could involve having more parties. It could also involve having more diversity within the parties. Where Joe is entirely correct is that this issue will get decided in a presidential election. And we have to remember that the American public in large number elected George Bush the second time and therefore affirmed this policy early on. And that's only going to be undone or reaffirmed in the next election. And I'm optimistic, at least, by the range of opinion we're beginning to hear within both the Democratic and Republican parties. It looks like Chuck Hagel is going to run as a Republican presidential candidate against the war. And I think that's for the good. And if that needs to involve more parties, I'm for that, too.
Our guest is Jeremy Suri, Associate Professor of History at UW-Madison, talking with us about the demonstrations over the weekend in Washington, D.C., primarily, but also in other cities across the country, including Madison and Racine. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, wondering if these anti-war protests are going to be effective in hastening an end to U.S. involvement in Iraq. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 14 minutes before 7 o'clock, coming up after 7. It's our Monday State Capitol Report every Monday after 7 o'clock. We are focusing in on issues facing state government, issues being debated under the Capitol Dome. We'll get an update from Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. And then we will focus in on the new UW proposed admissions policy that would look at other non-academic factors when choosing what students are admitted to UW schools. There will be a forum tonight with school officials, admissions people at five different campuses across the state. We'll talk about that new admissions policy and the politics surrounding it coming up in our next hour. We're talking about the anti-war movement in this country today as compared to yesterday. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. There was a rally in Washington, D.C. It drew tens of thousands of protesters. And there were also demonstrations in other cities, Boston, L.A., San Francisco, Madison, Racine. We're wondering what thoughts and questions you have about this anti-war movement and whether you think it will be effective and whether you're a part of it. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Tim in Ladysmith is with us next. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Personally, I think the anti-war protesters are absolutely wrong. I think their actions are emboldening terrorists, and if they don't think that, I would like to hear what their solution is once we do pull out of Iraq to fighting terrorists, because we're going to be fighting terrorists in the United States again once we come out of Iraq. And unless we finish that job in Iraq and make that country stable, it's going to be a mess. We still have troops over in Europe and after World War II, and this is a situation of a country's infrastructure that was totally devastated and demolished by Saddam Hussein. And it's going to take some time. And Americans need to have the stomach to do the job.
Yeah.
So,
are these protests emboldening the terrorists, Professor Suri?
Well, it's hard to say. It certainly is true that the terrorists or any adversaries the United States faces are strategic, and they recognize when the American public is not in support of something the president says everyone is in support of, and then they see the evidence that they're not. They certainly recognize that. On the other hand, going back to the Vietnam analogy, it's hard to say, it's hard to prove, hard to even provide evidence for the fact that what was going on in the U.S. changed North Vietnamese strategy. I think the North Vietnamese were fighting the same war all along and presumed from the very beginning that they would outlast the Americans in Vietnam. And I'm guessing that the insurgents in Iraq are thinking that way, too. Even before the protests began, the president said we were going to be in there for a short while. He was not making the kind of commitment that Americans made at the end of World War II in Germany, for example, which Tim correctly referred to. So I don't think we can blame the anti-war protesters for undermining the military effort. As I read it, what at least some of the protesters are saying, maybe not all, is that we've pursued the wrong strategy. This is not necessarily an argument against the use of force overall. In fact, some of the speakers, mm-hmm. at least in Washington, argued for a focus on Afghanistan rather than Iraq. And I think there's a powerful argument to be made that we've pursued the wrong strategy in Iraq and that we have diverted our resources from where the bigger threat really is, and that's the Taliban in Afghanistan. After all, they're the ones who provided the camps for the training for the bombers on September 11th. So it seems to me that the protests are not really against the use of force against terrorists. They're against the ways in which this administration has chosen to use force.
Yeah. Indeed, Democrats like Hillary Clinton say, let's pull out of Baghdad and redeploy and put more in Afghanistan, more troops in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of logic to that argument. Again, I'm no expert on Afghanistan, but what I'm reading shows that there's some evidence that the Taliban is coming back into power. That, to me, would be a far worse disaster than seeing Baghdad turned over to a leadership that we're not particularly happy with. I would rather see us get the things done right in Afghanistan, especially because it seems to me we have someone in Hamid Karzai who we can work with there. I think that's more of a pressing issue.
Tim, thank you for the call. Mike in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, good morning. Kind of following up on your last caller, I think we have to take the big picture. You know, while I agree that, you know, Iraq is a mess the way it's been handled, I applaud the protesters and their right to protest, but I think we have to look at the big picture, and I don't think we can look at it by country. It's not Iraq, it's not Iran, it's not Afghanistan. It's the region. It's this problem that exists with these Muslims that, you know, they have this tendency, and so by protesting and by giving a weak face, so to speak, without a doubt we're emboldening them. Don't forget what Osama bin Laden said years ago. He said, if you push the Americans and you hurt the Americans, eventually they will fold. He said that years ago, and so. Yeah. We can't focus per country. It's the region. It's this idea. Yeah. Thanks.
Professor Suri?
I think those are important points that Mike raised. I do think we have to think in terms of the big picture. I think we have to think regionally. I think we have to think globally. And I think that does mean that we have to be prepared to use force to go after bad guys, and the terrorists are bad guys. Not all Muslims are bad guys. A small group of terrorists are bad guys, and we need to go after them. We need to do that, though, in a way that's effective. We don't want to appear weak, but we also don't want to appear stupid. And I think we pursued a stupid strategy in Iraq. I think we could have done things a lot better there if we were going to fight a war there. I think we could be doing things a lot better in Afghanistan today. And I'm most concerned that, and I think many protesters are concerned, that we fight the war against terrorism effectively if we're going to fight it as a war. And by locking the wrong people up, torturing them, and then getting ourselves bogged down in a civil war, that to me is only giving ammunition to the terrorists. It's also making us look worse in that part of the world than we already looked, and therefore providing more ideological and rhetorical ammunition for them. Let's use force to go after the bad guys, but let's do it effectively, and let's target ourselves at where the bad guys really are. And I don't see this administration doing that.
Thanks to Mike. Ann in Madison is with us now. Hi, Ann.
Hi, you asked about media coverage. I think Channel 27 did a good job in Madison. People who were there, Jesse Jackson did a great job, a two-hour program nationally covering the Washington demonstration. And I think that people who were there estimated about 500,000 people, because people come and go at these things, and usually the media get there early. They report, you know, the initial people, but they don't report everybody. But today, I think the most important part of this effort is going on. The people were there for 3 days mostly. 800 people, including the demonstrators, are going to lobby, citizen lobby Congress, to end the war. And to do effective, to accomplish effective things rather than just these non-binding resolutions. And I think having all of these pretty well-informed people talking to every single congressperson is going to be a great part of this effort.
Mm-hmm. Professor Suri.
Well, I think that's all good to do, and I'm all for that, and I think Anne is absolutely right. The personal approach, people going and talking personally, moving beyond the sort of image and actually discussing this with Congress people is a very, very important thing to do. But I really think that to change policy, two more things need to be done. One, I think people have to find a way to talk to those within the administration, and maybe not the president or the vice president, but Condoleezza Rice, people in the National Security Council. There has to be that kind of conversation going on there, if they will allow that. And then secondly, activists need to get involved in the upcoming presidential election. I think things will be determined finally by who the next president is and what position he or she takes on this issue, because the war will still be going on one way or another, whether there are more troops over there or less. And the next president is going to have some big decisions to make, and I think that activists can have a real influence on policy by affecting who gets elected.
Yeah, and besides that, do these types of demonstrations need to continue on a regular basis? I did read someone was saying that every few months or so they want to continue to do this.
Well, I think the hazard with that is that you get both a dissipating turnout and also, it becomes par for the course, so people don't pay too much attention. I think these kinds of conversations have to continue, and I think effective activists will be those who make sure these questions come up front and center at every presidential election discussion. Every Iowa discussion should be a discussion about Iraq. Every New Hampshire discussion should be a discussion about Iraq. That's, I think, the most effective way. So I would encourage the activists to go to New Hampshire and Iowa, where the primaries are going to occur, where the candidates are already out there, and bring these issues up. Make Hillary Clinton take a strong stand on this.
Thanks, Ann. Yvonne in Brown Deer, you're on the air.
Good morning. I've been listening for several days to UN, CNN and C-SPAN with the Senate debate on that resolution. And it was very enlightening. It was nice to see our Senate discussing things civilly and intelligently and ultimately uselessly. It took Chuck Hagel to very seriously and sort of dramatically, but very seriously put it where it belonged. I think we got to get out of our heads on this subject. We went into Iraq for very wrong reasons. It was all their business that they needed to take care of. We went in there because Bush's father had supposedly been targeted by Hussein. The Iraqis had nothing to do with 9/11. They had nothing to do with all of the terrorism that's going on. We don't belong there. It is people that are suffering in that area of the world and in this country.
Yeah.
Now, all of this...
What would you like our guest to address, Yvonne?
I'm getting to that.
Yeah, we're almost at the end of the hour.
Nothing has been said on the program so far that isn't all in the head about strategy and da-da-da-da. This government is in big trouble. Maybe you people in the media who are dealing with it on a different level, you are affected by that. I understand that. But the rest of us are looking at what's happening to our children. We're afraid of what's going to happen to our grandchildren. Are they going to be drafted and sent over there? That sort of thing is what's in the public's mind, and it's not being addressed by... You guys do a wonderful job.
Well, thank you, Yvonne, and let's get our guest to address that concern of yours.
Yeah, I think I like Yvonne's phrase that we've got to get out of our heads, that we need to think in more creative and open-minded terms. So I'm all for that, and I think doing that is something we should encourage, but I think at the same time we also have to operate with the political institutions that we have, with the political issues before us. And so we need to do both of those things, and insofar as these kinds of discussions encourage that, I think we're moving in the right direction.
And with that, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Jeremy Suri, Associate Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, author of Power and Protest, Global Revolution and the Rise of Détente, and the forthcoming Henry Kissinger and the American Century. Jeremy Suri joining us today from Florence, Italy, talking with us about the anti-war protests held in Washington, D.C. and other U.S. cities over the weekend, including Madison. Thanks to Cheryl Gasser for producing the hour. Thanks to Leo Duran for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for calling in. Hope you stay tuned. There is much more to come. And if you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.